Today on Vox Talks Economics, what do stress tests for climate risk tell us? And what are they missing? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. Climate change will affect the value of many financial assets, and stress testing can potentially capture the impact of those changes on the health of the financial system. But a new paper from CPR argues that in their current form, these exercises may be underestimating the impact of changes in our climate. Dirk Schoenmaker of Erasmus University is one of the authors of that paper, and he joins me now. Dirk, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, Tim. Nice to meet you again.
We're always talking about these huge, important problems that need to be resolved, and I can't think of anything much bigger than this. Let's talk about stress testing, first of all. Since the global financial crisis, we've been hearing about stress tests and their results a lot more. What's the principle of stress testing? How do they work?
Basically, what you do is you design different scenarios, what could happen, and then the challenge is that the scenarios are tough enough, that they're not too easy. And in this case, on climate, so you have different type of climate shocks. You make a scenario for it, and then you check how your asset portfolio or your lending portfolio is doing under these scenarios.
And we talk about bank stress tests. Are they just for banks?
No, they are the first to be done, and quite a few are happening. The ECB has done it. The Fed is going to do it. China is busy. But you can also do them for insurance companies and pension funds. EIOPA, the European Insurance Occupational Pension Authority, they're doing it for insurance and pension funds in Europe.
Something else we've seen a lot of since the global financial crisis is regulation and improved supervision as well. Is there anything that stress tests can tell us that compliance with regulation like, you know, Basel III, for example, cannot tell us?
What the typical regulations do, they look at the expected risk. And if the risk is higher, you get a higher capital charge. And here we really make scenarios which go a few steps further. Basically, you do the scenarios to learn from it. So you can learn you have a certain concentration risk. For example, if all your mortgages are for houses next to rivers, which can be flooding, you can have a concentration risk coming from the flooding. If you are in New Zealand, you have sea level rise. All your houses are on the coast. So that type of things you try to learn from your stress tests, and it gives you extra information. And if the supervisor finds that you have higher risks, they either ask you to diversify, or they will, in the so-called Pillar 2, ask you for extra capital.
Let's think about the risks for a second. When we are talking about climate financial risks, is there some way or ways in which they are different to the traditional financial risks that we've been stress testing for a decade now?
First of all, let's just say what they are. So you have the physical risks, so more or more intense hurricanes, floodings, heavy rainfall, what happened to Europe when we had the river floodings. That's the physical one. And the second one is the transition risk. That's if a certain policy, for example, a high carbon tax, but it can also be consumer preferences or a logical change. For example, if hydrogen really becomes more available and also cheaper, then fossil fuels may not be attractive anymore. So it can be coming from policies, but also from technology, the transition. And that's the biggest risk currently. And we typically underestimate, that's the big thing, we underestimate these shocks. I did with a PhD student and a colleague a stress test 4 years ago. Then we had 100 euro carbon tax.
Yeah.
And today the carbon tax is already 100 euro. And I had to argue to also put 200 euros as a scenario in. So things can go faster as you think. That's the main message of these stress testing.
But as I understand it, the way in which a lot of stress testing is done is we look at what happened in the past and we model it and we see the immediate impact of that and maybe a medium-term impact as well. But climate risk, we have not seen the impacts before. It's unprecedented. also, I guess we're looking at these long-term changes that might take a decade or more to become apparent. Is there very much that stress testing in the form we do it can tell us when we're looking at risks like this?
You cannot use historical data because it is in the future. And secondly, climate science, which is well developed, underlying the IPCC reports, they're using very advanced models. And even what's happening today is not yet captured by the model. So they're constantly updating them. Basically, it goes faster than the models predict currently. And one of our pleas in the paper is, please use the latest climate modeling in your scenarios. Otherwise, you really underestimate what could happen.
In the paper, you have described the types of potential climate shocks that have been modeled already. We are in the early days of this kind of stress testing. You describe three types of these shocks. In these scenarios, what's happening?
Yeah, so we first have the abrupt transition. And that's why where economists get excited. So if we impose a very severe carbon tax, what happens to the assets? How will they be revalued? Low carbon will increase in value and high carbon will decrease in value. So that's really the economist paradise. We put a strong price in what happens.
Yeah.
The second is the hothouse world. So we get incredible rising temperature. It's happening almost each summer is the coldest of the future, but the warmest from the past. So we are really on a rising, we all know it, in the summers, it's getting hotter.
Yeah.
If that carries on, then we really come into a hothouse world. That's an incredible increase in temperature. However, we can also have a climate disaster shock. And that can come from heavy rainfall, like the rivers, what happened in Europe a few years ago. That can happen more often. We have seen it happening in Pakistan, which was flooded heavily. And it can, for example, come from the ice cap. Huh? The ice caps are melting. And it's very difficult to understand what is going on. But it may go faster. The permafrost in Canada and Russia, that's unfreezing. And if that goes faster, we really may, scientists call it tipping points. And then you really get a shift rather than a credible one.
And are there other scenarios as well that we're not even testing for yet?
Patrick Bolton and colleagues did a great paper 2 years ago. It's called the Green Swan.
Yeah.
We all know the Black Swan shocks. A Green Swan means we get an abrupt revaluation of real assets. And if that happens, then it has a huge impact for the financial institutions financing these real assets. So that's the Green Swan type. And the name is really well done. And the other type is old-fashioned finance, the Minsky-type shocks.
Yeah.
Remember the 2008 financial crisis with these subprime mortgages? We got an abrupt repricing of these assets. So this is completely only in the financial markets. And then it can go very fast. So we are now after Credit Suisse. And you see all bank bonds being repriced and bank shares. And that's a Minsky type of shock.
Yeah.
And the Green Swan and Minsky type of shocks, which are quite common in finance, are not yet incorporated in these stress tests.
As one thing I noted that you also point out is not incorporated, is this endogenous feedback loops that amplify the shocks. Why aren't they incorporated in the models yet? Is this a serious omission?
Feedback loops are extremely difficult to model because you get an outcome from the climate to the economy to the financial sector. Then the financial sector weakens. Then the economy weakens further with a further impact on the financial sector. So it's all basically follow-on effects. And they're very difficult to model because then you need very precise data.
Yeah.
Because if a financial institution fails because of a climate shock, it has an effect on the others, but then you need to know exactly when it will fail or when not. So these feedback loops are difficult to model, but this is the bread and butter of central banks when they do macroprudential supervision. So this should be high on their agenda to look at. So what we recommend, yes, climate stress test is a great tool for central banks to use and supervisors, but in the current form, they give false comfort because the results are not too worrisome. But we say, please be careful because we underestimate them. We do it partial, only certain sectors, the wrong modeling with not the heavy climate shocks and no feedback loop. So we need to improve them.
In 2021, CEPR released a report on how central banks and asset managers should manage climate and natural disaster risks. To find out what the report recommended, listen to an episode from May of that year titled The Financial System and Climate Risk.
Doug, I mentioned that we're in the early days of climate stress testing. Is this true? How widespread has testing been up to now?
So Europe is really the front runner. And when Mark Carney was at the Bank of England, he's really the big initiator of the whole climate debate.
Mm-hmm. The need to manage emerging mega risks is as important as ever. Because alongside major technological, demographic and political shifts, our very world is changing with profound implications for insurers, for financial stability, and for the economy.
You'll remember his big speech at Lloyd's in London.
The challenges currently posed by climate change pale in significance compared with what might come. The far-sighted amongst you are anticipating broader global impacts on property migration, political stability, as well as food and water security.
And I still remember the day after in the Financial Times that people complained that he was doing it. It was not the business of central banks. These days are past. It is now well acknowledged. I think Europe is number one. People's Bank of China is number two. They had a chief economist who has been extremely active. And I really have to say that the US is a bit behind. So the Fed are now considering them. But I would say Europe, Asia, and then the United States.
And what techniques are they using? What aspects of the financial system are they testing?
As we said before, they're starting with banking.
Yeah.
And as they are central banks, they're quite used to using macro models and also the integrated assessment models of William Nordhaus. But we all know that they hugely underestimate the effect of climate change because they look at the impact on the macroeconomy, unemployment, GDP growth. And then look what happens to the economy and the sectors, but then you do it so much high over that you really underestimate it. And what we are arguing is we need more micro models where you can have a sectoral approach, because we all know that certain sectors will be hugely hit by a carbon tax, the carbon intensive, but not all industries. If you're a consultant, you're not hit. Maybe you have more business advising companies how to transition to low carbon. If you're in heavy industry or airline or any type of transport, then you're heavily hit. And that sectoral approach, you can do with micro modeling. It's not yet happening very much. So we argue, get out of your central bank macro mode and get into a more micro sectoral mode in your testing.
With these tests so far, I haven't seen the results of them leading the news, and you did mention that they do tend to underestimate the effects of climate change. Have the results, generally speaking, been that the financial system is robust?
More or less. So you will see losses, 10-20%, but more or less robust. That's also coming out of the Nordhaus models, the integrated assessment models, 5-10% GDP. And we all know that's a gross underestimation. So we argue to be useful in the future, we need to step up. So it is great that we are getting started and you can find certain concentration risk. But if we really want to know what's going on, we have to be bolder and more precise in our approach.
Your concern is that the shortcomings that we have been talking about, you've described, they are all biasing the results in the same direction as an underestimation.
Exactly, because Green Swan and Minsky type of shocks, they're extremely sudden. And we know from 2008, and we've seen it now again with Credit Suisse, it can go very fast on financial markets.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to be an investor to feel the pain, what can happen. We all have a pension, or most of us. So the type of shocks really do only the macro stuff rather than the sectoral approach. And as you said before, the feedback loops, that should be the bread and butter of central banks because they are system thinkers. So central banks can cope with it because this is really their field.
Mm-hmm.
What can happen with the financial system? So we encourage them with our paper to step up their efforts.
Yes, but as you say, climate models are very sophisticated. Modeling feedback loops is no simple thing. Is it possible to make improvements, to make those changes right away now if we wanted to?
I always do the joke with my students. Who can best predict frost in early spring in Florida?
Hmm.
that are not the weather forecasters, but the future markets at Chicago.
Right.
And whose money is at stake? The big insurance company, Swiss Re, Munich Re. And when I was working on it in the past, I work with these big insurance consultancies. They are on top of it. They have the newest of the climate modeling. And I would recommend central banks and supervisors to work with these insurance people whose money is at stake.
Yeah.
So they pay to get the best and to introduce that kind of knowledge into the models. So the models are around. They're still being updated. That's life. But these are the best. And I would suggest reach out to them and then incorporate that.
You mentioned that Europe's leading, China's doing well, the United States not doing quite so well. But of course, climate change is a global problem. And everything we need to think about is in terms of a global solution. When it comes to climate risk stress testing, would it be good to have a standardized, globalized stress testing regime?
There are two sides to the coin. One, and that's you're alluding to, it would be no harm if there are certain ways of doing it where the Financial Stability Board or Basel can set some kind of standard. It's crucial that the tests are location specific. The big, big issue in Asia is sea level rise. Indonesia, yep. New Zealand, when sea level rises, Jakarta places, Wellington and other places in New Zealand will be flooded for quite soon because they don't have natural coast defenses like we have in the Netherlands. So that's a big issue in Asia. They have hurricanes are a big issue in the US, we know, also in Asia. And our flooding from the rivers in Europe is really the heavy rainfall. The warming up is not causing more hurricanes or more heavy storms, but more intense. If the ocean water is warmer, you get a stronger, more intense hurricane. So, for example, in Europe, the issue is more heavy rainfall and more river flooding. So the issues are quite different across continents, but the way you are conducting them, you can do in a similar way.
Well, however we do it, there's a lot of work to be done. Dirk, thank you for talking about it today.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper's called Climate Risk Stress Testing, a Conceptual Review. It is discussion paper 17921 at CPR, if you want to look it up that way. The authors are Henk-Jan Reinders, Dirk Schoenmaker, and Matthias van Dijk.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the best new research in economics every week. So subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Next time on Vox Talks, the link from corporate taxation to carbon emissions.